recording?
Are you recording?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, okay. Hello. This is author Tony Lee. And you are listening, unfortunately, and I'm so sorry for you. You should find better podcasts. There are much, much better podcasts out there. But I suppose if you're stuck with this one, you are listening to too much scrolling. And apparently, I will see you in the future. Apparently.
For November 27th, 2018, I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hessenfly.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around the lobby of a hotel at the end of Chicago TARDIS 2018.
Steve, you kidnapped me.
Yes, again.
And I woke up and here I am, and we're recording.
Second year in a row where I said, hey, let's go to a Doctor Who convention. And you went, Doctor Who?
And then you stuffed a handkerchief right in my mouth, and I don't remember a lot afterwards,
hey,
but here I am.
Hey, does it smell like chloroform?
That's right. So here I am.
Yep, here we are.
With all the Doctor Who fans.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Steve, for those who don't know, Steve is a Doctor Who fan.
Really?
Yes, and that's why we're here, because everybody is enjoying themselves.
Well, we're having so much fun. This is the fun convention of the year. Happens every year, the weekend after Thanksgiving. It is the birthday of Doctor Who. It is Doctor Who's 55th birthday this weekend.
Now, did you post something on our feed that says the first Doctor Who show ever was released last week?
Yes, 55 years ago on November 23rd, 1963. That is a date that will live in infamy because Doctor Who was born.
And for those who are listening at home, Steve did not have to look that up. He knew that.
Because it's my birthday too.
Oh, there you go.
Well, a few years later, but still, November 23rd is kind of a significant day for me.
Steve, when you talk about your birthday, that sounds like foreshadowing.
Aha!
So we'll talk about that later. Steve, let's get to the big stuff.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You know, I've been watching some stuff on TV because I didn't go to a movie theater this week. But you know what? Netflix has everything that you need.
Netflix is a pretty amazing service. And last Thursday, of course, was Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
And Thanksgiving means something special in your household. Tell us what it means.
The 30th anniversary of Mystery Science Theater 3000 happened just this Thursday. And they released six new movies. They're calling it The Gauntlet. It is the new binge-watching way of seeing bad movies one after another.
And for our listeners who have never watched Mystery Science Theater 3000, Mystery Science Theater 3000 is what, Steve?
It is riffing. This is watching bad movies, mostly from the 60s and 70s.
And riffing, you mean pop and locking?
That's right. That's right. I'm dancing down the aisle, making fun of movies. Oh, wait. No, that's a different thing. Riffing is making fun of movies, watching a bad movie, and finding a way to find joy in it. That's Mystery Science Theater 3000.
So let's go through a couple of the movies that you got to see this week.
Uh-huh.
Through the Mystery Science Theater streaming service through Netflix.
Uh-huh.
Steve, tell me a little bit about the movie Mac and Me.
This is a huge commercial for McDonald's. McDonald's really saw E.T. and thought, wow, we need to get in on this genre. These kids are loving this E.T.
They're aliens. Loving it?
They're loving it. And so we're gonna give them what they want, and we're going to be a part of the next production. Mac and Me is not E.T. It is a very cheap E.T. ripoff.
All right, for our listeners at home, while we are, McDonald's did officially move downtown their headquarters.
Uh-huh.
We are probably 6 miles from Hamburg University,
right,
where they used to do all their training and over in Oak Brook.
Mm-hmm.
So what a timely movie to watch, Steve.
This is a terrible movie. It is a terrible alien movie, so, I tell you.
This is, I think Paul Rudd's in this film. See?
Paul Rudd is not in this movie. This is not actually a Paul Rudd movie, but he either loves it or hates it so much that he's brought a clip from Mac and Me to the Conan O'Brien show about a dozen times.
So this is an awful movie. That's sort of an E.T. Is there anything redeeming about it?
The Mystery Science Theater riff on this movie is redeeming of this movie. In terms of this movie being something that we learn something about humanity, no, not really. We learn that humanity loves McDonald's. McDonald's is featured very prominently in this movie, including lines of dialogue spoken by Ronald McDonald himself.
How awesome a special that is. And of course, you can't get enough soft drinks. Coca-Cola certainly had something to say about aliens.
Yes, there were no Reese's Pieces in Mac and Me, but there is Coca-Cola. There's a line in this movie where the kid says, oh, Coke must be the thing that they drink on their planet. That's the the sustaining thing that these aliens need when they're here on Earth is Coca-Cola.
Sugar water is probably the... We all know it's good for us.
Naturally occurring on the planet from from Melmac or whatever planet they're from.
Yeah, I don't think there's any world that said, you know what, salt and water is probably needed, but I never heard sugar and water. All right, Steve, you also got to see this masterpiece called Atlantic Rim.
Atlantic Rim, you've probably heard of this. It came out in 2013. It was about kaiju, right? It's a giant rubber monsters coming to attack a city, and we have to build these giant robots to fight these giant rubber monsters.
And this starred that stormtrooper from Star Wars, right?
Oh, no. You're thinking of Pacific Rim. This is the other ocean.
Oh.
This is Atlantic Rim. This is a movie that came out 2 weeks before Pacific Rim, which was a big budget Hollywood movie. This is Atlantic Rim. It is not.
But it was brought to you by the group that brought you another classic, Steve. In fact, a classic franchise.
This is the Sharknado production company that found their niche with Sharknado.
Their niche.
Think about it. B-movies have been around forever. We've always seen bad movies. Sharknado is a bad movie that really stands on the shoulders of that genre and goes, this is a bad movie, come and watch it, it'll be fun.
It's a franchise, Steve.
Atlantic Rim is not that.
It's not a franchise.
No. Atlantic Rim was a money grab. They said, hey, we got this movie, Pacific Rim, that's coming out. We're going to find a way to make money on it. We'll make another movie. What can we call it? Spitball. Atlantic Rim. All done.
All right, Steve, you also got to see a fancy movie called Lords of the Deep.
Lords of the Deep. This is a base under siege standard sci-fi movie. This is not really a bad movie as such. It's not good. It's not a good movie. The puppetry in this is ridiculous. The monsters in it are basically just rubber puppets that you can tell. You only see enough of the... of the monster to make it almost kind of seem scary. This is kind of like Alien,
sure,
but not in the horror genre, just base under siege, but it's underwater.
And this still had Patton Oswalt and Felicia Day as part of the group that that has a lot of fun with this.
They are still the mad scientists who are keeping Jonah up in the satellite of love, and they are still a big part of this conversation, and they do a great job in these.
So if you're a person who enjoys Mystery Science Theater or Riff Tracks, mm-hmm. which both groups have been very nice to us, this will be something that someone would enjoy, right?
Netflix. Netflix is the king right now. You go to Netflix, you find these movies, they are bad movies that you will enjoy. I didn't get through all six of them. There are certainly some people on the message boards that ran the gauntlet.
They got the gauntlet, Steve?
They ran the gauntlet and got all six of these movies watched in a day or two. I did not. I only watched three of them. I look forward to seeing the rest of them this week.
Well, your kids asked for mercy, Steve, and you decided to throw in, you decided to throw something on that was different.
Now, to be fair, they asked for mercy from all of the Mystery Science Theater that I've been watching for the week because of Turkey Day and the new show. And to be fair, my 12-year-old chose The Christmas Chronicles on Netflix, and I walked in the middle of it. But yes, The Christmas Chronicles on Netflix has been really well advertised on my Netflix account. I don't know about yours.
Oh, yeah.
It's very prominent.
It stars, of course, Disney's son, Kurt Russell.
That's right. The child star Kurt Russell is now old enough to play Santa in a movie, and boy, does he do a really great job of it in this movie.
So did Goldie Hawn show up at all this? With this?
Spoilers!
Oh, really?
The last scene, Mrs. Claus shows up, and it's Goldie Hawn.
Really?
And it's freaking adorable.
Oh, how awesome is that?
I literally...
Look, I didn't even know this. I didn't see this.
That is the end of this movie. And for those of you who are looking forward to watching this movie, it's a beautiful scene where she shows up.
Steve, they're not married.
I know.
But they live in sin. And they have for many, many years.
And they are the cutest, most adorable, sinful couple I've ever seen.
And they don't ever age. That's the whole point.
There is certainly an aging that has happened for Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn, but Kurt Russell...
Eternally youthful.
Absolutely. He plays Santa in a youthful way, and it's fantastic. This is a really good Christmas movie.
Oh, excellent.
I don't know the last really good Santa-based Christmas movie. Maybe it was The Santa Claus.
Yeah, it could be.
That might be the last good Santa movie before this.
Not the one that starred Frasier?
No, there's been some real bad Christmas movies. This is a really good one. I recommend The Christmas Chronicles on Netflix. I bet you if you turn on your Netflix right now, you'll see it as the top thing.
All right, so you also got to see Son of Patricia, a comedy special by Trevor Noah. Tell us a little bit about that.
Here's the thing. Trevor Noah was supposed to be on stage in DeKalb, out in the far western part of Chicagoland,
mm-hmm.
and he unfortunately was ill and had to cancel his appearance in DeKalb, but he did drop this new comedy special on Netflix this week. Trevor Noah is a really thoughtful, really intelligent storyteller.
Okay.
He's got that wonderful South African accent.
He's got a beautiful accent.
His mother speaks Xhosa. And he talks about that.
Clicks and clacks?
Clicks and clacks. He talks about how it's not as clicky and clacky as you think about it, because it is a real language,
yes,
that Americans have turned into clicks and clacks. And he tells these wonderful stories, these beautiful tales about humanity, about traveling. I really like Trevor Noah.
Well, as an American, we enjoy seeing other parts of the world, especially English-speaking parts of the world.
Right.
Because they're close enough to what we know, but also they're foreign.
And giving us a little bit of insight into that foreign lifestyle.
Sure.
Life is different in South Africa. And he goes into, oh boy, does he go into some of the racism that he has,
sure,
encountered in the United States, and that he laughs at, because he says in this special, apartheid was the best racism he's ever lived through, because it worked as a thing. He comes to the United States and people say these terrible words to him, and he laughs in their face because those words have no meaning to him. And it's fantastic to hear that perspective. Yes.
He's in a society that is spitting racist words to him?
He was talking about a trip that he made to the southern part of the United States,
really,
where somebody shouted racist things at him while he was walking across the street, and he just laughed. Yes.
Well, I tell you, man, it's still, you know, one day I guess racism will be eradicated. But this is just crazy. How can you love people and then hate people at the same time?
And that's one of the most beautiful parts of this story that he tells, is he sends love back to these people that are sending hate toward him. I love Trevor Noah. This Son of Patricia is a great special. Again, Netflix. The Netflix gods keep giving, and I keep taking.
Well, everything you've talked about was on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Steve, I got to watch streaming stuff this week, too.
Yes, what did you see?
Well, I got to see my favorite person in the world, Tom Cruise.
Yes.
Star in the movie I've always wanted to see, The Mummy.
Those of you who have not heard this story before, Chip finds these Tom Cruise movies that are coming out and is very excited about them and never goes to see them in the theater.
I don't see Tom Cruise movies, and I don't see Arnold Schwarzenegger movies,
right,
in the movie theater.
But
eventually I'll eventually see them. I'll eventually see them.
And
they're all right. They're never great, but they're serviceable.
They're an adventure.
Steve, it stars that guy from Gladiator, too, Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe's in this one as well. So this is The Mummy. This is the Universal Monsters trying to be rebooted. They did a Dracula movie, they did a Frankenstein movie, and they did a Mummy movie.
It's a world-building movie, Steve.
Right, and
it's not much of a world-building movie.
No, the three movies really did not build a world. The expectation was we were going to get a world where these three monsters interacted, and I don't think we're going to get that movie.
I don't think there needs to be, and in fact, I never understood why there needed to be anyway.
Right.
But they tried to build. I mean, obviously, Star Wars and Marvel, the success they're having there,
yeah,
meant that, Universal had these monsters. Let's, mm-hmm, kind of create this world.
And okay. Harry Potter, too. Harry Potter's got that world building, too.
Correct, correct. But I would say it's not as bad as I thought it would be. Certainly isn't something you have to see. It was streaming on HBO.
Okay.
So I have AT&T.
HBO, phone. That's old-fashioned Netflix, right?
It is old-fashioned
right?
Netflix. They have wonderful productions mm-hmm. of their own internal stuff.
Yeah.
But they also stream a lot of movies. And this is one of the movies. I think it came out last year, maybe November or so. So it's about a year old. Anyway, I got
Tom
to
Cruise
see it.
Tom Cruise running. This time, it's a mummy that's chasing him.
Steve, there's a lot of running in yeah. this, and all I can say is I got through it. I suffered, but it wasn't that much suffering. It was okay. In fact, Tom Cruise needs to find another genre to uh-huh. be in, because he is another one of those guys that's internally youthful,
mm-hmm.
but he's they always put him in the role that maybe a 30-year-old should be in.
That's right. Kurt Russell has found another genre with this Christmas movie. Maybe it's time for a Tom Cruise Christmas movie. Does Scientologists have Christmas?
I don't know, Steve.
We should find out.
Oh, there we go. Maybe we could do an interview.
Let's see. Opening this week, we've got some movies. This is definitely not one of those big weeks for movies, is it?
But we've got some fun stuff.
Post-Thanksgiving.
There's fun stuff.
Okay, the first one is called The Possession of Hannah Grace. This is an exorcism movie. You know what they say.
You know what they say about possession movies, Steve.
What do they say, Chip?
I don't know, man. All I can say is this certainly had some echoes of old movies.
Yeah, The Exorcist. We are certainly looking at the next generation of The Exorcist, but put into a 21st century context here.
And it's a scary movie, yep. And okay, so it's coming out.
Yep, there's
Steve,
that.
Steve, the big movie that's coming out this week is coming up.
The one that you're excited about, at least, is called Anna and the Apocalypse. This is a zombie movie.
It's a musical, Steve.
At Christmas time. Yeah. Zombie musical at Christmas time.
Steve, this looks fun.
This looks like a great
I
fun
zombie
run.
Zombie at Christmas time, zombie musical. That sounds awesome.
Zombie movie at Christmas time. It's called Anna and the Apocalypse. It's coming out this Friday, and it looks a lot like Shaun of the Dead because it's British.
Yeah.
So it kind of falls into the genre of our fun with Doctor Who here, and it's a musical.
All right, Steve. All right, so Steve. If for some reason we wouldn't be making it to Anna and the Apocalypse,
yeah,
the musical, are there other things we could see this week?
Yeah, there's a couple of dramas that are opening this week. The first one is called Head Full of Honey. This is a man suffering from Alzheimer's embarking on one final road trip with his granddaughter. This is a beautiful story about growing older and having all those memories and sharing them with the next generation.
This is a story about Alzheimer's, Steve.
Another one.
We got Matt Dillon and Nick Nolte.
Nick Nolte. I forgot to mention, Nick Nolte is the Alzheimer's patient in this one. Couple of gravelly voices. Matt Dillon and Nick Nolte talking to each other in very deep tones.
This is maybe the third movie this year
uh-huh.
that's dealing with this subject.
Uh-huh. I wonder
yes.
who's going to the movies, Chip.
Could it
maybe be the baby boomers who are going to the movies?
All right, so if I wasn't going to see Anna and the Apocalypse,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to see another movie that I would like to see, this is the next one.
Yeah, this is a movie that is another drama, another story about a family. It's called If Beale Street Could Talk. This is a young lady who falls in love with a young man, and the young man is put into prison, and she is...
Steve, they have a moment of passion, Steve.
Uh-huh.
A moment of passion.
And she is left to deal with the consequences. This looks like a beautiful film.
This is, obviously, Beale Street is based in Memphis.
Correct.
This is based on a story by James Baldwin.
That's right.
Looks really good.
It looks like a really good drama. This is going to be on my list of dramas to catch sometime in the next few weeks.
Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. You have been telling me about this book for months now. It is called The Accidental Superpower, The Next Generation of American Preeminence and the Coming Global Disorder. My God. God, Chip. This came out in 2014. It's written by Peter Zeilan, and you've been telling me all about this.
All right, so Peter Zeelan, I became aware of him on YouTube.
Okay.
He gave a couple of speeches. He's kind of a futurist, I would say.
Okay.
Basically a person who has worked for think tanks and is looking about how the United States fits into the global world.
Right.
Going forward. This is a really fascinating book.
So tell us how the United States is positioned here, because you've been telling me about this for a while, and I'm pretty excited about where we're at.
All right. In fact, I think that is the story, that you should leave this book recognizing the United States as much as any place on Earth could be protected and insulated from anything else that goes on in other markets.
Mm-hmm.
The United States is pretty self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
Zeelan basically is using a number. He's looking at the United States geography. He's looking at our demographics. He's looking about how our country is laid out and set up. We're lucky to have the water we do, the barriers we have, the deserts we have, the rivers we have. The United States is really well established. And also looking at the shale revolution and basically our energy independence that has come over the last 10 years.
Okay, so let's start with shale.
Yes.
Shale is a way to get oil out of sand, right?
Correct. So usually we're thinking of Texas would be a good place. You're also thinking of potentially up in North Dakota area like that. And the United States, let's back up real quick. After World War II was set up, you know, World War I, basically, Europe turned to Germany, put their foot on Germany's throat, and said, you're going to pay for all that you did, and we're going to extract this. Led to the rise of Hitler and all the atrocities. The United States basically was brought into World War II, fought two wars, basically in Europe and in the Pacific,
mm-hmm.
And basically, at the end of the war, said, listen, this is what we're going to do. We have a Navy.
Mm-hmm.
All the, you know, Japan, you wanted access to materials, you wanted access to a market, you have access to the United States market, which is a large, large market.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we did the same thing to Europe. We said, listen, you've been devastated, Europe, Germany, you're devastated. Listen, I'll tell you what you do. We will have our Navy basically allow you to protect your goods. You can bring them over to the United States and use the United States market to build up. So the United States basically have paid for defense for the world since the end of World War II. That has been led to Pax Americana. Peace around the world is really what it brought. There's no time in history where we've had more peace than right now.
Okay.
Because of that, these areas have been able to basically not spend their dollars on defending themselves from each other. So Germans and French and all the other areas don't have to defend themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The United States basically has taken on that role.
Right.
And the American public has paid for it. So one of the things that you should know from that is that those costs, the World War II is over, those costs have been borne by the American public,
mm-hmm.
and they were naturally being reduced. In fact, on Friday, Merkel talked about setting up a European army or a military.
Yeah.
Is talking to the EU about doing that. So this was a natural occurrence. Obama was working on this. Trump sped up some of it. But really, this is talking a little bit about the retreat of the United States on basically
protecting all of these areas.
Those markets, or protecting the ability to get to the U.S. market.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot about demographics. Most places in Europe, we're seeing it in China, we're seeing it in Japan, are upside down. They had huge populations that are now going to be, when I say taken from the system, this is like the baby boom generation. They are pulling money from the savings from their savings from the population,
mm-hmm.
and they just don't have, we're Gen Xers. There's not enough of us.
Right.
So one of the things eventually we learn from this book is that we should expect our taxes to go up. Gen Xers just don't have a population that's going to be able to outvote boomers. And boomers are certainly a very they're going to be voting.
But and then our children are going to come up right behind us, and they're going to start voting real soon here, and we're going to be outnumbered by them real quickly.
Yeah, in fact, I can't remember if it was in this book or one of his talks. He said that Gen X will finally outnumber the baby boomers in 2070.
2070. That's when we will finally have more numbers than the baby boom generation.
Now, if I misspoke on that, I'm wrong. But one of the things that we're dealing with is we're gulping down this group of people who will eventually start being, you know, baby boomers will be taking money out of the circulation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just because they save during their time. And I think 2030 is when we finally start, where we've gulped all that stuff down.
Okay.
And we get some relief. So the point is that, you know, we'll have higher taxes for a period of time, or we should expect that. But it looks like that maybe that will loosen up at some point. Potentially. We talk a lot about how our geography has made us, you know, we have a breadbasket in the United States. We basically can feed ourselves.
Right.
And while there are three other breadbaskets, there's one in Brazil, one in Russia. Ours is the most productive and the easiest to get to our population. We export food, and we will be exporting food for a long, long time.
Wow.
We have waterways that make it very easy. In fact, this book talks about how certain areas, like Germany, because they have the resources they have available to them, why they had the rise of government the way they had a rise of government. They're very meticulous with their use of resources. They're good bureaucrats is really what it comes down to. And the United States can just kind of slop our way through government, and we can kind of just pitch in our way and make it work. And it shows in sort of how we view manufacturing. It shows how we view putting things together versus areas that have to be much more conscious of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we still are having babies, Steve.
Yeah.
And we also have a pretty liberal immigration policy. It works to our advantage.
Yeah.
So we are the youngest demographic in the world.
Wow. And that will certainly lead to a future where we are even more powerful as a superpower than we are now.
Well, in fact, the deal is that we may become, and I'm not saying that we'll become isolationists, but we'll become more isolationists. Maybe going back through the early 1900s,
okay,
before we got pulled into World War I and World War II.
Yeah.
And so the point of this book is that we have a market that everyone wants to be part of. The areas that we're going to be that are going to be very important for us to defend are going to be Canada and also Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we have a couple of other ones, Colombia and Venezuela, and then the Caribbean islands, even including Cuba. This is a fascinating book that basically left me being very optimistic about the United States' future on the world stage.
And gives you a little bit of a path of what to do about it as well. A little bit of an idea of, should we be investing in other countries, or is it an isolationist kind of time in America? Should we be investing in America?
And he's not using the word isolationist. I threw that out there.
Okay.
But my point is that this idea that the reason why we've had free trade the way we've had it,
mm-hmm,
is because it's been in the United States' interest. Now, Adam Smith wrote a long, long time ago about the trade that you do. So when we talk about tariffs against Chinese goods and stuff like that, while there's a certain group of people who enjoy the benefits of that protection, the average person does not.
Right.
We want free trade because we're consumers. It works to our benefit to have open trade.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is look in the news on Ford and about the layoffs. Tell me about what the tariffs have done to Ford.
Right.
Okay. So what it does for our benefit, that being said, that's not the only reason why the United States took this approach. Is it because we basically said we'll defend this trade? We basically built up the world. It's the wealthiest it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, poverty has dropped like a rock. I mean, the number of people living in poverty continues to go down.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is because our military and our being able to defend. If you're a country and you're not having to defend yourself against pirates, think about what the Navy and the Persian Gulf means to that region.
Mm-hmm.
That means that oil tankers are leaving that to go to Europe or to China or to go to India or Japan, and they're not having to worry about other challenges.
Mm-hmm.
That means that the trade routes that a China has to go through are much more direct than if they're not. That's if you're following why China keeps trying to set up these little islands, these man-made islands, that's basically trying to create this way to get goods and services safer to their mainland.
Huh.
This is a fascinating study.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I ate it up. I think I may be reading the second book that he came up after this. If you don't want to read one of the books, go to YouTube and look at one of his speeches.
Mm-hmm.
He grew up in Iowa.
Okay.
He became interested in this all because he got interested in where roads went.
Hmm.
And basically started following geography. So the United States has tremendous geography. He does make some speculation at the end about what will happen. He talks about the rise of Turkey. Turkey's going to be very important to their area. About countries that could potentially go away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, countries like Greece could be absorbed.
They've been having some financial difficulty, that's for sure.
Well, they have all the challenges of any group in that area. And in the world is going to be changing. We should be expecting, while it's Pax Americana, peace around the world, as the United States chooses to strategically start withdrawing from some of these areas, you know, war's going to break out. We're going to see changes. And the question is whether we become part of it or not. And the question you need to ask is it in the United States' interest to do that? Should the United States taxpayer bear the burden of the world police?
Yeah.
So, what a wonderful read. I highly recommend it. I'm fascinated by international studies, and this is a good one.
Because this put together a lot of ideas that you've had before into a clearer picture of the future. All those little jigsaw puzzle pieces that this author was able to put together and paint a picture for the future.
And the deal is I knew a lot of this,
mm-hmm.
and I was drawing some conclusions, but you know what? If somebody has already kind of put together a pathway, you plug yourself into it, and all of a sudden you get to the ending of it. I think he articulated this idea, whether it's truth or not, I can't say, but definitely he's looking at the world very similar to how I would look at the world. And once again, the United States path that we are considering. These are things that on an international level, how the government will choose to react or sort of plug itself in.
Right.
We will have a rise of Mexico from this. This will be the manufacturing. Manufacturing will repatriate itself to the United States. Companies will use Mexico as a place to get inexpensive labor for the world. There will be a number of changes in Canada, one because demographics, two because they live on the border. They have an upside down demographics as far as...
Oh, here comes a Dalek. After all that talk of peace, here come the Daleks. Awesome. That just brings me joy. So, let's see. And that's why we are in a lobby at the convention for the Doctor Who. All the fun stuff that's happening. So this one is a good book. You should take a look at it. It is The Accidental Superpower, The Next Generation of American Preeminence, and The Coming Global Disorder by Peter Zeilan. Good work.
Scroll with it.
Birthday wishes, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate all the birthday wishes everybody has sent me over the last few days. I celebrate my birthday and Thanksgiving and the Doctor Who convention, and all of my friends and all of my family are here to celebrate with me.
Well, some of your college buddies got to come up from Indianapolis to see you, Steve.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about where you went and the fun you had.
That's right. Our executive producers, JD and Elizabeth, surprised me for my birthday on Friday. They were in town for a totally unrelated matter, and my wife found out that they were in town, and they came together to make a conspiracy against me, and they showed up at the restaurant that I had made reservations for, that's The restaurant's called 257. It's in Schaumburg. It is a Pac-Man-based restaurant.
It's located at Woodfield Mall, which is truly an event mall.
Uh-huh.
And for those who are following at home, because Sears is so local to us,
uh-huh.
It was part of Sears.
It was half of the Sears store.
But they basically rented it out to a big restaurant because what else is Sears
going to do? Sears wasn't really using it very well. Yeah, this was a great time. Friday night, Black Friday, at the largest mall in the area. Boy, that was good planning on my part.
It was a little busy, Steve.
It was a little busy, but we had so much fun. This is a great, fun place. I love JD and Elizabeth and their girls, and we had so much fun. We sat there for 4 hours and just had fun.
All right, so let's talk about 257 real quick. 257 is based on Pac-Man.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last level?
256 is the last level of Pac-Man. So there are 256 Pac-Man levels. This is the next level after Pac-Man. You go and have a drink.
So all those classic arcade games that you grew up with,
uh-huh.
Not only are they available to you, but they've taken them and they've refreshed them, as in they've got great colors. They're like they're brand new.
Uh-huh.
They also have bowling there.
Yes, there are 6 bowling lanes. We sat and bowled for hours, just having fun, enjoying each other's company.
And eating good food.
Yeah, the food there is very good. They have some very creative dishes based on Pac-Man.
So JD and Elizabeth were also celebrating birthdays.
Yes. Elizabeth's birthday was over the weekend, and JD's is coming up on Friday, so happy birthday to our executive producers.
Oh, how wonderful for you guys. Happy birthday to you,
and
happy Black Friday at that time.
That's right.
Black Friday is also a fun time.
Uh-huh.
So, obviously, some people went and got some fun stuff.
Yeah?
Steve got a brand new cell phone.
Finally. My cell phone was down to a 45-minute battery. It was just unusable, essentially.
Google's Pixel 1, Steve got to enjoy. Steve, you upgraded.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what you got.
I finally got myself a Google Pixel 3. This is, in my opinion, the best camera I've ever owned in my life. The camera quality on this phone is better than any camera that I've ever owned. I love using this device, and I finally have a battery that lasts, a full class period.
Well, the beauty of what you got is that, one, it's brand new. It's,
uh-huh.
It is the highest of the technology. This is the epitome of the Android ecosystem.
This is the Google ecosystem. Yes, it's Android, but it is really purely a Google phone.
Sure.
Google is the king of my data right now. They own me in so many ways that I don't want to think about very often.
So, in fact, Disney and
Disney
and Google must fight over you, back and forth.
If Doctor Who was purchased by Google or by Disney, I would be just fine. Between those three, oh, and Mystery Science Theater. Oh, and Netflix. Okay, so then maybe there's 4 or 5 people that own me at this point, but Google is certainly the company that I lean on for all of this information that I need to get through my day.
Now, I was considering going over and getting a new iPhone.
Yeah.
But I restrained myself, Steve. So I still am going to remain with my legacy or what we call it, archaic iPhone 6.
You're getting pretty archaic at the iPhone 6 level. I did get some new phones for my sons.
Okay.
The iPhone 10, which was on sale at half price
mm-hmm.
for Black Friday. This Pixel 3 was half price on Black Friday. Black Friday's a great time to buy stuff. I don't know if you've heard this. I don't know if there's been news stories, but Black Friday's for shopping.
And sometimes boxing. You never know. You never know, Steve. All right, well, it truly is one of the great times of the year for every person
mm-hmm.
if you're part of the United States and you feel that something is missing as part of your life,
mm-hmm.
you know, we like to make fun of it a little bit, but truly, it allows every person to enjoy the spoils of something unique that they feel that they want.
That's right.
So, good for them.
Including the Doctor Who convention, which happens on Black Friday every year.
Well, I was going to mention the Cards Against Humanity 99% off sale,
yes.
which was probably one of the most joyous.
It was pretty fun.
It was a lot of fun to go in there.
Uh-huh.
So for those of you who don't know, Cards Against Humanity is based here in Chicago.
Right.
It is a worldwide phenomenon. It's a game.
Yeah.
And it's a very sarcastic
uh-huh.
and fun-loving
game. It is a fun-loving game for awful people. You and your family saying awful things, not to each other, not directed at each other, but at the world at large. And boy, is it fun.
Well, they said they were going to give a big F you to Jeff Bezos. That was one of the, as it scrolled across the top. But the joy of it was that everything was a 99% off. They actually sold a $100 bill for a dollar. Legal tender.
Yeah.
You just want to work. They sold a pirate ship, Steve. They sold a guitar signed by Jimmy Carter.
For no real reason.
I said, you're going to have to make up a story of why you have a guitar signed by Jimmy Carter. And they sold a picture of Richard Nixon.
An autographed picture of Richard Nixon.
So it went on all day.
Uh-huh.
And it is 99% off. They sold a car, by the way. A $25,000 Ford Festival, I think, for like $250.
Really?
Yes, they did. And the deal is they would send it to you. So if you were in the United States, they would send it to you. So this was part of their advertising budget, and obviously very, very fun.
Yeah.
I did bid on one thing, and the deal was, you want to make it, it was kind of funny. All right, so you press, like, they had a countdown to when you could bid. And when it got down to zero, you press to go through it, and then it would ask you a question, and you had to go look up the question. Mine was, who is the current emperor of Japan?
Oh, wow.
So,
not Hirohito.
So immediately, you have to go over to Google. You look it up.
And then you've already lost the auction.
Exactly.
That's fantastic.
So they had a lot of fun playing with you, even if you were trying to bid.
It's great marketing.
All right. So here we are at Chicago TARDIS.
Uh-huh.
Let's finish and talk a little bit about this.
We've had so much fun. I want to thank everybody who's had fun with us this weekend. Our executive producer, Laura, was here yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. And she was here with her brother, and they were having fun, enjoying the ambiance, the community that is the Chicago TARDIS. We are just a big family. This is a family gathering. There's no turkey involved, but there's plenty of things to do and people to talk with, and we just love Doctor Who, and we love the community of people.
Now, it's in the Chicago area, but it's in Lombard, which is one of the suburbs.
Right.
Which is next to a mall.
Sure.
And a Target, Steve.
Yeah, right between a mall and a Target. Yeah.
So you can have your Black Friday and enjoy your your time visiting with all the people who came in to enjoy Doctor Who, I guess.
That's right. We want to thank Tony Witt, who is the host of the Doctor Who Target Book Club podcast. He hosted a party on Friday night.
What?
Oh, yeah. There was quite a few room parties on Friday and Saturday, and we've been having a lot of fun here at the convention. We want to thank Tony Lee, who is one of the stars of this convention. Whether or not he's a star in anyone else's eyes, he's a star here. He sits in the lobby and holds his own convention most of the time. We got to talk to him. Ian McNeice, who played Churchill in Doctor Who, was very kind to give us some audio.
Did he drink and eat as Churchill for you?
Not in the lobby, but I don't know.
Did he have cigarette? Not cigarette.
No,
nicotine poisoning.
Oh God, no! Not enough nicotine in the world for Churchill, is there? Ian McNeice is wonderful. We want to thank him and everyone at Alien Entertainment and the staff of Chicago TARDIS. They made another great year of celebrating together as a community. Come on out to Chicago TARDIS next year. Make your plans now. You should be here.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I woke up here after you knocked me out.
That's right.
And we got to record in this wonderful lobby with the Daleks standing over us. I hope to goodness that the plunger doesn't shoot me or anything like that.
It sucks your face.
It does.
The plunger sucks your face. The whisk is the laser that shoots you. You should really watch more Doctor Who, is really what this comes down to.
Chet. Let's just say I'll let you watch Doctor Who and enjoy it, Steve. I enjoy the people who enjoy it.
That's right. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Absolutely. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can find all the news that you need on our news site, news.TooMuchScrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We'll see you in the future. Exterminate.